For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome in, everybody, to another live edition on Tuesday night of 410 Sports Talk. I'm James Haskell, along with my co-host Glenn Martin. And Glenn, it is a big week as we get closer and closer to the draft. Of course, opening day is coming up for the Orioles. But I just want to take a quick second. We got a lot we're going to get into tonight. But I just want to send thoughts, prayers, and everything else to those that were affected by the collapse, the tragic collapse of the Key Bridge here in Baltimore City. The news choppers have been flying all over the entire day. They're still out there. Huge shout out to first responders, those that, of course, lost their lives or affected by it and saved lives by warning other cars. I mean, just absolutely tragic. Wanted first to pay my respect to those folks and hope the best for all families involved.
And going forward, this is not something that's going to be a quick cleanup and turnaround. Mm-hmm. This is going to be decades worth of recovery. So community's in for it in a way, but I'm sure, we'll certainly get to the other side. And so just wanted to quickly mention that. It's absolutely insane. I thought it was like some sort of a sick joke when I woke up this morning, but nope, very much so the reality. So certainly thoughts and prayers with those people affected and who will continue to be affected. But did want to move on to some bit of a brighter news. Yeah. Certainly in our world, we're extremely excited about it. We're welcoming back and home a former member of the crew here. You know, we don't have a very big crew here.
No,
there's not too many who are on it. And so we're super excited to get a familiar face back with us. Welcoming back intern Brad, who looks to be muted, but that's okay. Let's see if we can unmute. There we are. And so welcome back to intern Brad.
He's got to stay muted if he's not talking because he's living that dorm life, dude. He don't know what's going on back there.
That's right. We don't know what his roommate might be up to. But Brad, first and foremost, welcome back to the team. How you feeling tonight?
Thank you. I'm feeling great. Just a casual Tuesday night. I'm super happy to be back with you guys.
Nice.
Yeah, man. Yeah, we can't wait. Yep. We're saddened by your departure, and we understand that everyone moves on to bigger and better things. But look, we are so excited and feel privileged to have you back, just like DK being a part of the team. And, we're all here because we love the Ravens. So make sure you guys look for Brad's, he's going to be on the show more, doing a few more segments with us.
Oh, yeah.
Doing some stuff on Instagram. So if you guys don't follow us on Instagram already, make sure to go do so. Mm-hmm. Brad will continue to crush it over there as he continues to help out. Brad, thank you so much for joining the team again. Mm-hmm. And we're looking forward to some of your draft coverage coming up and some of your takes this offseason. But we wanted to give you some quick FaceTime, have you say what's up to the people. Yeah, man.
Yeah, I'm super happy to be here. Everyone watching social media, hopefully, you'll be seeing some new content on there. Going to be starting up here soon, and I'll be here for the summer. So, yeah.
Oh, man.
Awesome.
Appreciate it, Brad.
Yeah, and like guys, I said, go ahead, Glenn.
Oh, well, I was going to say, just be on the lookout. The social media will get a bump, thank goodness, because, look, me and Jimbo need help with that. I'll just be frank.
Dinosaurs, dude.
Yeah, we are old men typing with just the thumbs.
I'm still trying to reset my MySpace password.
Exactly. But all right, Brad, we'll have a good night, and we'll be seeing you soon.
Okay, see you, Brad. See you. All right. We are excited for Brad to come. I cannot wait. I'm looking forward to it. But I tell you what, Glenn, between the end of the season to when we have Jason Pruitt on again from Draftplex is a lull in my mind, right? When Jason comes back on again, everything starts flowing again, right? Your brain really starts thinking. You get excited about it again. Mm-hmm. We're excited to have one of the most accurate mock drafters. Bringing in the belt himself, Jason Pruitt, on the show. What's up, Jason? How you doing, man?
Hey guys, good to be back. We're trying to make the comeback this year as far as the most accurate. Been hanging in there the last couple of years, but still nobody's been that accurate since.
Yeah, that's right. Let them know. Let them know. Your accuracy is still at the top, no doubt. There's not many people who can say they were the best at anything. And you had the belt, the best of the best. So yeah. Welcome back. Welcome back.
Appreciate it. Good to be back here. And we'll talk some draft. We'll talk some Ravens, what we're looking at.
Oh, yeah.
Got everything out in the last week or so. So there's a lot to go through and comb through and figure out where they're going to do in April.
Yeah, man. No, I'm excited. The real things that I'm hoping to talk to you about today, obviously, that we'll go through. And folks, if you guys have questions, put them in. And if you want a guaranteed response, of course, and you're feeling convicted about something, of course, you can put in a super chat and we'll be sure to get to you. If not, we try and get to everyone's, but it's a numbers game sometimes. But really, I want to talk about the draft as a whole from a macro perspective, depth at positions of need for the Ravens, you know, realistic guys in that 30 area, stuff like that. So overall, I guess my first question is, Glenn and I see the needs for the Ravens as certainly O-line, interior, and both tackles. Like, let's be honest, Ronnie Stanley's in his last year in Baltimore, right? But everywhere but center, right, is really where the Ravens have a need. Some people think wide receiver. We think it's lower down there, but I think number two, in my opinion, is probably edge. Outside of that. And then another one I think that is bubbling up more and more every day is corner, because, you know, Marlon Humphrey is potentially, based on the structure of his contract, also potentially in his last year here. So we need depth there, right? Because I think we're pretty top heavy with those two guys. Don't have a ton of depth there. Glenn, are there any other positions that you see that I forgot to mention as, like, you know, those top tier needs? Also, I think O-line is like maybe an interval or two out in front of the rest.
Yeah, because O-line, of course, with three starters missing, you know, you can count that as multiple. Like, you can count that as number one, number two, however many needs you want. And I'm glad you brought this up, because I'll be honest, Jason, I was looking at your chart when you break down the draft needs, and you got it color-based, Jason. And as Jimmy knows, there's some of us out here who have color blindness issues. And so I'm sitting here looking at this chart that you have that's completely based on my ability to recognize the difference in these colors. So because I have it up right now, I don't know what we need according to you, because my eyes don't see colors right. So Jason, please, yes, like Jimmy said, let us know from your perspective, a non-biased opinion, one who certainly is an expert in predicting these things. What do you look at as the Ravens, say, top three areas of need right now?
Yeah, first of all, that's some fair feedback. I do color code it because it's not linear. You know, with most of it's like team needs, one, two, three. And I look at it a different way. And as I was going through this year, it's the same thing, because I changed the format of my team needs a little bit by adding the picks to it, because I think that gives you context for what positions are available and maybe the strength of those positions, how much they're going to stretch, which ones are a little bit lighter. So if you need to get a particular position, say offensive tackle or cornerback, where might you need to get that relative to where you pick? And also give context for those teams that are like, they don't pick until the second round, so I'm not going to put a first round need on if they can't draft there. You know, so, gotcha. But I understand what you're saying, like, you know, because obviously want to take into account that sort of thing just for content digestion, that sort of thing. But looking at the actual needs, I think you're right on with the offensive line. I think tackle is a position that one is going to stretch for the first round. So that's going to be your best opportunity to get one. Likewise with guard, you know, I'm not as clued into what the Ravens are doing or have done or need to do and where they sit in terms of what their views of the players they already have on the roster. If they think, you know, we're gonna make a go with a Ben Cleveland or whoever that is that is still there in the depth chart, or if they need to draft that. So some of the positions I'll take and say they could go here early. They may not address it at all. They may just take somebody late. So like guard, I have as a position like that because I just don't know. And maybe hopefully that will evolve a little bit getting closer to the draft. Cornerback, I do see as a need. First round wise, I think there's an opportunity there. After that, it might be a little bit slim because I don't think this is as deep of a cornerback class as has been the past few years. Tackle for sure. I think tackle, you're kind of in a sweet spot for maybe that second tier. And then after that, edge, I've got is kind of a 2-3. So more of like a second or third round kind of need, because I think you're not at a sweet spot at 30. There's you're either going to be hoping somebody falls, or you'd be reaching a little bit for based on how that I see this class But those are probably at the top. I've got wide receiver likewise is my blue. So Glenn, for your purposes, that's the early value or late depth. I could see them drafting a receiver early. Obviously the receiver is a deep class every year. This year is no exception. But at the same time, you've got other needs there that unless you're going best player available, even that might be kind of that gray area where you're outside of the top 4 to 5 prospects and getting into the ones that, you know, might be pushed up a little bit, or maybe more second round type players. So, I'm kind of in line with you guys there as far as the needs, as far as what I see as an outsider looking in.
Yeah. And Steven says more likely we sign a splash signing pre or post draft just because we sign backups at needed positions still shows your hand for draft needs. This will be interesting to see how the Ravens play this one.
I will say, Jimbo, typically they like to go into the draft without no any needs, glaring holes. Yeah, that way they can do the best player available strategy. So I would say splash signing would be more likely pre-draft.
Yeah.
But you know they're going to be active right up to the start of the season and into the season as they shown last season.
Well, and I think maybe a splash signing could be Clowney last week of August, right? You know, something like that.
Oof. You know, I'd be surprised if Clowney sits that long only because he's taking all these visits. Yeah. And to take all these visits and then say, I'll be back to you in August. I think would be a boss move, bro. That would be a boss move.
Hey, look.
But I would say pre-draft for the splash and backups and roster filling after the draft would be my guess. But who knows, Steven? I think it's certainly a good question. I did want to get your quick take because of your unique ability, Jason, of being a Cowboys fan as well. Because I think even if we don't sign guys who visit the Ravens, I think at least gives us a glimpse as to what they're looking for, what type of player they want. And so most recently they did have on a visit Michael Gallup. I know you've seen him up close and personal for years. So what type of receiver would you classify Michael Gallup as? And is there anybody in the draft that you'd see that could get to the Ravens that kind of in a similar vein to what he would bring to the Ravens?
Yeah, I think Michael Gallup, like kind of the career he carved out for himself in Dallas, was kind of like at his best. He was like a really solid number two. He kind of fell down the depth chart over the last couple of years just from the injury, the recovery, and just, you know, not as many opportunities when you're cycling different guys through there. Obviously, CeeDee Lamb grew into a bona fide number one. And then you've got Brandon Cooks there, who was somebody that they really liked and wanted to work into that offense. And meanwhile, Michael Gallup's opportunities just kind of dwindled from there. But you would have these flash games where he would, you know, show up, catch 5 or 6 balls, make an acrobatic catch. So I think he really set himself apart from the talent that the Cowboys had on the roster. Somebody like if you wanted to throw the deep ball up in the 50-50 ball, he could go and get it and it would look amazing. Then he would disappear, you know, so the consistency wasn't there, you know, and I don't know if that's just a function of the role, if that was a function of the offense and how the game plan sorted itself out over the course of games. And then, you know, obviously the health there, because it wasn't just the knee injury that he had a couple years back. I mean, he always seemed like he was in and out of the lineup with some sort of ailment here and there, and then just the opportunities went away. As far as like where he would probably sit with the Ravens, he'd probably be, you know, a 3 or 4. Mm-hmm. And if I were to look at you'd look at probably a bigger kind of just solid receiver, not anybody that has a particularly defining athletic trait, but somebody that you could plug in and could be mildly productive. I'll put it that way. I don't think you would sign Michael Gallup and expect him to come in and catch 100 balls or maybe even 50. You know, earlier in his career, he seemed like he was on that trajectory, and then it just didn't happen because of, like I said, the injury and then the way the Cowboys kind of moved their offense into a different direction. But if you were to look, I would say probably look later in the draft for that. I don't think he really aligns very well with most of the prospects that are at the top of this receiver class. You may be somebody like a Brendan Rice, kind of there, kind of on that fringe day two, early day three, a bigger receiver who's probably not going to blow you away with speed, but is really, you know, talented as far as, you know, your route running, your possession, being able to big body to be able to you know give a big target for Lamar out there. And then you may look at somebody like a Bub Means later on in the draft from Pittsburgh, another, you know, bigger.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Relatively speaking, receiver, but also just a really, really solid player in order to you know to give you a third or fourth type of receiver there to round out the depth chart.
Mm. Well, look, Jason, I'm gonna go back to our need 1 through 1,000 because this is the question I've had the most anxiety about asking you because I take your you know your word is football gospel, right? So. Should I be really nervous going into this draft, knowing the needs that the Ravens have? Or should I be less nervous based on how well I think the Ravens do in the draft, along with the depth of this draft at the offensive line? Basically, I'm asking, how do you feel about the depth at this at the offensive line in this draft?
Offensive line depth is really good in this draft compared to years past, just in general. And it's not just kind of there's a bunch of guys, but there's a bunch that are very talented, very worthy of a high pick. And that's at all three positions. I know you don't need a center, but there's a lot of good centers in this class too. But, you know, typically, and I was kind of going through the numbers over the past few years earlier this afternoon. With like guard, for example, there's usually like three that are drafted in the top 100. And that's pretty consistent. You usually have maybe 4 to 5 that are kind of in that range. And this one, you could, you know, you could make a case that there's maybe 7 or 8 different guards that could be in that range. Tackle, we kind of talked about. I mean, there could be up to like 12 tackles taken in the top 100.
Wow.
And especially in the first round, you know, you typically have like 1 or 2 that are just like lock stock. One, you know, top 10 picks. I don't know that, you know, may outside of maybe Joe Alt that's the same this year, but I think any one of those guys, if you took them in the top 10, and I'm talking about Alt, Latham, Fuaga, Mims, Fashanu, you'd be okay with that. Nobody would consider it a reach. It just kind of depends on what the team is looking for. But then after that kind of wave, you've got a Tyler Guyton. You've got a Jordan Morgan who maybe have some guard flexibility. You've got Troy Fautanu from Washington. Same thing. Everybody thought coming in he would be a guard, but then he showed up at the combine. He's got the long arms. He's got the movement skills. He can probably stay at tackle. So just between those guys, that's 9 tackles that could be there in the first round. And I think that last bunch of names is who you're probably looking at, a Guyton, a Jordan Morgan. Maybe Kingsley Suamata'ia, one of those Polynesian names. I'm sorry, my pronunciation isn't quite there. I've only like looked at these guys. I haven't explored all of the different things, but yeah. And then you do have some that are kind of more in that later 2-3, you know, kind of range, like a Blake Fisher from Notre Dame, Patrick Paul, who's more of a project from Houston. And then there's a couple other guys whose names have bubbled up recently, Roger Rosengarten from Washington on the right side. And then the handful of guards there. I think the guard range is probably second and third round.
Yeah.
You know, you have the kind of tackle transition guys there at the end of the first that might be the best guards in the class, but they're not guards by trade. But you get to a Christian Mahogany, a Dominic Puni, Christian Haynes. And a couple of other guys within that range in the kind of that third round, maybe early day 3, like might stretch into the fourth round. So the depth is really good there. And you do have like 5 or 6 centers that I think everybody's counting on as being potential starters at some point, maybe a couple early, maybe a couple a year or 2 down the road.
So it sounds like based on the depth, there's going to be guys that push them, that find themselves lower in the first round that are, you know, maybe graded higher than that and things of that nature. It sounds like the Ravens have their, hopefully will have some sort of a pick of the litter Glenn, I'm gonna read Steven's comment, but then I have a follow-up question. Sorry that I have a follow-up question, but I gotta ask this.
It's cool.
Okay, with a top 10 O-line last year. Oh, let's see, with a top 10 O-line last year, but a need to revamp the O-line. Was it really the O-line? And if so, these draft picks aren't going to be all around better than our previous line, right? Well, I think what I would say to this is that you can't pinpoint, you know, if you're saying if the issue was the O-line or not the O-line, I think in the loss, if that's what you're referencing, the AFC Championship game, there's blame everywhere. I don't think anyone's...
Well, I guess what they're saying, if it was the O-line, is there really a realistic chance that they could get better at O-line,
right,
losing three starters and replacing them with either rookies or rookie starters?
Yeah. Right. So that leads right into my question, Jason, actually, that one, do you see it as, with this draft class, do you see it as possible that the Ravens actually roll out three starters that are rookies and can compete and be in like a above average offensive line? Right. Like, do you see that as like a good plan?
I can get on board with two. Three might be pushing it a little bit. Because you look at, if you wanted to do that, then you're looking at going 30, 62, 93. Mm-hmm. Your top three picks basically being offensive line.
Oh, that's my dream.
So if you want to do that, I think it's possible. And then we'll see what happens down the road and you know, how the year ended up with that plan being put into place. But I think if you do that, then you're kind of bypassing the needs you might have at corner, which we'll talk about that in a minute. Kind of my view of how that might impact what you're able to do at corner. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it can be done. I mean, the results may vary though. But yeah, I think if you were to go into the season thinking somebody I drafted on day three is my penned in starter at any one of those positions, I think that might be a little bit of a challenge just because of the growing pains of moving in. Just to say it can't be, not to say it can't be done, but it's more the exception than the rule. And I don't know how many teams you're going to find that ever did that and did it successfully.
Sorry, Glenn. Actually, this is my last one.
Hold on now.
We didn't talk about Voorhees, I don't think, with you last year.
I did
hit on this one, but now that he's kind of, like, he's redshirted last year, for lack of a better term. What was your evaluation of him? And because a lot of people are saying he's our shoe-in at left guard, but it's all based on college tape. We haven't seen him do it at the pro level, right? So what's your evaluation of him and his potential as a player?
I think I had him kind of in the third, fourth, and I don't recall, but didn't he have an injury the last year?
Yeah, he had that ACL at the combine.
So now you're looking at basically, like, you know, I guess it's not 2 years, but I mean, but in the end, you're coming off an injury. You haven't played yet. I mean, to say that is just really a leap of faith that what he put on tape, because to be honest, I feel like his last season there wasn't as impressive because there were people that had slotted him going into the season as like a top 50 pick.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't recall where he ended up getting drafted. It was on day three, right?
Yeah, well, he tore his knee at the combine and then put up 38 reps after with a torn knee.
Yeah. But even then, even with the combine, I don't feel like the injury, I mean, it obviously it hurt him, but I don't think that by the end of the process, people were putting him in the top, you know, three rounds anymore.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So, you know, I wouldn't go so far as to say, you have your answer already. I mean, he can certainly come in and compete, and maybe he proves that. But I don't know. Did he spend the whole season on IR or last year?
Yeah. He says he's ready to go now, and he's counting down the days. But yeah, we didn't see anything from him.
Maybe the Ravens do have a plan. They think, you know, and it's not just us on the outside looking in, that, you know, here's a guy that had a pedigree where you looked at him as being a kind of a day one starter coming into the league. Maybe they do see that. Maybe they're going to give that a try, and then you're down to two positions.
Gotcha.
But you just don't know. I mean, the uncertainty is there. So,
we certainly can't bank on it. But I know you were about to mention the cornerback position, and I heard you earlier saying that if you don't get one early, it's not likely you could get one who could contribute. At least that's my take, that you can't get one that can contribute right away unless you do so early. So what if the is there a chance that the best player available when they're picking is a corner? Is there a chance that that could be the case? And am I interpreting that correctly? And if they don't get one early, you're not going to get a early contributor in the late rounds.
Yeah. So I went through last night, was just kind of messing around and did like a 2-round mock, like not a simulator or anything, but I actually went through and did a 2-round mock, and I got to the Ravens at 60, and you're wiped out of anybody I would have put there. Wow. First round possibility, you have probably Kool-Aid McKinstry. Yeah. I think that's your best hope. There's a possibility that Cooper DeJean is still there. Nate Wiggins, I'm not sure what to do because, you know, the evaluations on his talent are there, but the size is kind of worrisome. But then again, he could also go top 20, and I don't think anybody would think any different of it. So he might not even be there. But then after that, you're kind of, I think, reaching slightly for like an Ennis Rakestraw from Missouri, TJ Tampa from Iowa State, who's gotten a little bit of late first round kind of buzz. After that, you have a couple of guys that, you know, like Kamari Lassiter, who was being thought of very highly. Then he ran a 4.65, and that's a red flag. You know, despite the talent and what he put on tape, you know, to not be able to run that fast, that sometimes can knock guys into third, fourth round that have been up there higher. But yeah, really after that, you have a couple guys like a Chris Abram-Strain, Max Melton, Mike Sanders still from Michigan, who's more of like a slot corner. Then there's a couple of guys in kind of that third, fourth round range who you may be able to mine a diamond out of. But I just don't know, like, again, if you want to go there counting on one of those guys to be a starter, but certainly developmental side, they could contribute. But one of the things that, like, just as a kind of a side note here from last year, going through and looking at team rosters and needs and a lot of the players, you know, one of the things like on the Cowboys side is they got no production from their draft class last year. But I was surprised to see so many players that were rated so highly and taken so highly that they just didn't play. And they didn't get snaps. Mm-hmm. They, you know, weren't starting. And it was just kind of a shock to see. And I was like, well, that maybe that's a thing around the league. So, I mean, you know, maybe that's the way things are going. You have a lot of free agents still on the market. You've got some, you know, rookies that just haven't gotten opportunity. So now even these guys that you come in, maybe they get pushed down a little bit more just because, like, well, we've already got a young guy on the roster. We don't need to draft another one. Right. So, but yeah, going through that exercise was really helpful for me. Cause like I'm going through, you know, a week after publishing the board, I'm already moving the puzzle pieces around, right, of who I expect to see just based on that. Cause again, kind of going back to, you know, for the audience that hasn't seen previous shows with me on it, like I do things differently. I'm not a scout. I'm not projecting a player's NFL success. I project where they're going to be drafted.
Right.
Yeah. Based on where I see them. So like for me, it's helpful to move these guys around. This guy go first round, second round, third round. But when I went through that second round, there's a lot of teams that need corners. So my thought was, you know, I pulled two picks for the Ravens, you know, over the course of the night, and you're wiped out at corner. There wasn't anybody I would have taken there at the end of the second round. So you kind of have a choice. You ever kind of ride the depth of the offensive line class, take your corner early, or hope for the best and, you know, maybe just find somebody that you think you could develop for next year or the following year.
Damn. That's a bleak look at corner.
That is a bleak look. Don C says, great draft analysis, Jason. Start out rough with the whole colorblind thing. You nailed it. Great job. Hate Excel spreadsheets myself.
Well, that's good to know, because last year I actually did take a look at it, and I'm like, I've got about three different formats that I was kind of tinkering with, and then if I took this one and kind of put it into another one and how that would work, and it would be a little more linear, and then it would be a little bit easier for our folks that deal with that to understand. So
yes, thank you. I was the kid who needed the words on the crayons to tell me what color it was. Okay.
And the memorization of where the traffic lights are, right? Like the red is,
it certainly, you know, helps that they don't mix it up on me. Like, this time it's going to be this way. Oh, dude, I'd be like, what are you doing to me here? We're definitely going to have an accident.
So really quickly though, Jason, before we're going to bring in Cole Jackson, and if you don't mind hanging out here for a couple minutes, because Cole has an affinity for
for the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Glenn likes to call the slobber knockers, the big boys up front. Mm-hmm. And so I'm thinking we can get a good brain think going here between your take on the draft class as a whole and then Cole's take on guys he thinks matches up with the Ravens. And hopefully you guys still like each other afterward. No, I'm totally kidding.
I hope there's a blood feud started tonight. That's what I want to see. I want to see. And I know Cole's up for it. He's always up for it. But no, I think what Jason just said is perfect. Draft expert.
Yeah.
Now we're bringing in and welcoming back, of course, as always, our film expert, Cole Jackson. Appreciate you joining us this evening. How are you,
sir? You guys getting me into fights here?
No. Dude, we're signing you up, bro. We're signing you up for fights. And Jason, look, I don't know many Canadians who are ready to fight, but I think you're one of them, Cole. Okay.
Yeah, Cole's hockey line, player, though, man. Is when you meet him in person, he's a hugger. So
I am a hugger. Nice to meet you, Jason. Appreciate
you, Cole.
Man.
How are you?
Good, buddy. Good.
And I also want to say that Cole's you didn't know, Jason, that today we're gonna have Mark Andrews on the show.
Yeah, you had no idea.
This is just his moonlighting job. But yeah, Jason, before we have you transition off the show, I wanted to like I said, give this opportunity to kind of talk about a few guys. So Cole, obviously we've started breaking on the draft with you and things like that, but Jason's take is that and I'm hopeful that I like I said before you hopped on, I take Jason's word as gospel when it comes to the draft as far as a projection and guys available, right? And so, you know, in his mind, there's depth there at offensive line and at guard and things like that. So the Ravens have a chance of getting some quality guys in that first 100 and maybe a little bit after. But what are some guys that you're looking at and really starting to get excited about that, you know, I kind of want to get Jason's take on too?
At 30, we're talking about?
And, you know, I would say, yeah, 30, top 100 as far as the offensive line goes.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting class. I think what is really going to help the Ravens in terms of their flexibility when pick 30 comes around, because we know historically they don't want to be pigeonholed into a certain position, right? That's how you end up with the Hayden Hurst picks. And historically, that's just not how it's gone. Like when the Ravens fans were banging the table for OJ Howard in
2016.
Ruben when Frost, they met Marlon Humphrey.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was because like Brandon Carr was still on the team and Marlon on paper wasn't a starter, right? And that's kind of how corner looks right now, just to give you an example. So I think it's interesting because, you know, not having to go with a left tackle gives them a lot more flexibility, because you can find, you know, your Blake Fisher in the second round. You can find a guy like that, that, you know, doesn't need to come at pick 30. But there are still guys at pick 30. Like, I mean, the dream is somehow we find a gas mask video of Troy Fontanu and, you know, he just flips on down to 30. But I think his pre-draft process compared with his tape, I think it's just propelled him to be, I think he's going to go in the top first half, to be honest. I like him that much. And I mean, you get to who would be there at pick 30. And, you know, I think Amarius Mims is going to fall because I think teams are going to be scared of those medicals. And then, you know, the lack of experience plus the medical scenario makes me nervous. So it's like, do you want to have both your tackles with injury concerns? So that kind of leaves guys like, you know, I think most folks see Tyler Guyton being gone. So it kind of leaves, you know, do you see Jordan Morgan and Kingsley Suamataya as first round talents? And are they guys that you want to stick at 30 and pick, basically? I'm really high on Suamataya. I'm not as high on Jordan Morgan. Then you look into the second round and you get, you know, a really toolsy guy like Patrick Paul that I really like. You get Blake Fisher that I really like. And then, you know, as it filters down, you really kind of see the depth of this class. You know, a guy like Roger Rosengartner, you can get a little bit later. Christian Jones, you can get a little bit later. So I think this is a really interesting tackle class, because there's guys from the first round projections all the way to the fourth round that I can really see coming in and competing at right tackle in each of the rounds. So I think that really speaks to the depth of it.
Yeah, it's so surprising. It seems like every year, every team has tackle listed as one of their needs. And every year there's not enough to go around. This is like the first year I can remember where you guys are saying, no, you could find day one tackle help pretty late in this draft. It's
at right tackle. I don't think you can make the argument at left tackle. Yeah. Well, I think that's the nuance of the positions, right? So
gotcha. Yeah, Kieran says, selfishly, I would love to see Kieran in the second. Yes. Well, wouldn't we all love to see that NFL money? The question is there a Kieran Martin in this draft that maybe we don't know about? And this is a draft prospect tweeting about him or messaging about himself.
No, he's speaking to the Yale kid. I can't say his last name. Amajia.
Oh, is he? Okay.
Yeah, out of Yale.
Oh, there he is. Okay. Yeah, I see. All right. Yeah, didn't you like him, Cole? I think I remember seeing... Was that
really,
the guy
really had, one of those toolsy guys? He's kind of like, he's one of those guys that I think needs a little bit of work, but he kind of brings you that athletic size, ability, some good athleticism, some of the unteachables that I like to look for in some of these prospects. And then we're, you know, focusing on Joe Delisandris, you know, fixing some of the technique issues.
Well, I got to throw some gasoline onto this fire, Cole, because Jason, you mentioned you don't like Jordan Morgan. Jason has Jason. Cole doesn't. Yeah, sorry, Jason. Cole doesn't like Jason Morgan. So right now, projected, Jason has us taking Jordan Morgan at 30. So I would like to know, Jason, you know, what it is that you think makes him a good fit for the Ravens. And then, Cole, what it is you don't like about the kid, man?
Yeah, be nice, Cole.
Well, the Ravens worked him out. And, you know, of the teams that were there, it was the Ravens, the Jets, the Cowboys, all three teams looking for an offensive tackle. And then I kind of looked into it a little bit more. As I said, I was doing the mock last night. Mm-hmm. The Commanders are reportedly very high on him too. The mock I did last night, I didn't give them Jordan Morgan, but the 1.0 that I did publish, they did. I just think he's a guard. I think he's a better guard. I think he can play tackle, but when I watched him, I was like, I think somebody drafts him as a guard. Doesn't mean he can't hold up as a tackle. But again, looking at how that kind of played out as a scenario, you were kind of down to your choice of taking one of those last tackles just to make sure you got a guy, or maybe going in the direction of getting a cornerback, which you could have done. But it, you know, at 30, I think I had two more going right after that. So, you know, it's just kind of the way that scenario played out. I don't dislike Jordan Morgan, but I see him as a 1-2. Like if he were to slip into the second round, nobody take him in the first round. I could certainly see that.
I'm worried about with Morgan specifically. I think he's a tweener. I think he's not physical enough to last on the inside in the NFL, but I'm not sure. Like you see him get beat with length quite a bit. You see him open his hips outside quite a bit because he doesn't seem to just have, it's weird. His athleticism is weird because I find he's really athletic in the run game, but I don't find him athletic in the pass game. And that's why he'll open his hips early, and that gives those inside counters. And that's where you kind of see those inside power rush moves and lack of length. And you can see him get cross chopped. And, you know, it's a guy that someone like Trey Hendrickson would absolutely feast on with his ability to kind of set up those inside post hand moves. So, that's kind of what I worry about with Morgan, but I will say Jason's absolutely correct. All I've heard from folks inside the building is that they love the kid. They think he's a tackle at the NFL level, and they were glued to him just like they were glued to Zay Flowers last year throughout the pre-draft process.
Boy, we might get a wow moment from Cole in our live draft show.
Yeah, when there's smoke, there's typically fire.
I'll be very clear about this. When I have this huge bias towards physicality, which I live and die by, I've missed because of it and I've hit because of it. If you don't play physical in college football, I just can't see it. It's just this game in the trenches at the NFL level, it's gotten too physical. And I can't stand soft players. It drives me bananas. So that's just that internal bias that I have. And like I said, it's helped me hit, and it's definitely made me miss before because sometimes you get too focused on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. I got to correct a couple people in the chat. Cole is much taller than Cat Williams or Kevin Hart. All right. Don't say he's got Kevin Hart. All right.
Hey, who's seen Cole in person? He's certainly much taller than Kevin. I make Kevin Hart look tall.
Short. I'm standing beside Spencer Schultz, and he's like 6'3".
Yeah. And he's like a big guy.
I'm 5'8".
Just me, so. Me and Spencer on either side of you. That would be a great picture.
It'd be bad. like someone's little brother.
And I did want to point out, because I'm sure Jason didn't see it, somebody's giving you some credit for calling Travis Jones and the talent he would turn out to be very early in the draft. And I know Cole's a big Travis guy as well. But I asked Cole's opinion on this guy, and the chat absolutely loves this guy. So I got to get your take, Jason. Keon Coleman, if he's there – first of all, will he be there at 30? And if he is there, would it be of good value for the Ravens to take Keon Coleman?
Yeah.
He'll be there. The value, I think, is solid. You have to just see how the board falls with the other receivers going off. Obviously, before the combine, certainly had the first round buzz, and then that kind of subsided after the 40 run. But that gauntlet drill, he's running full steam ahead and just plucking balls out of the air. I do think he'll be available within the context of the offense. I mean, they give you that big body that the Ravens always seem to draft over the course of the years. And, we don't know how many of those guys actually did work out, your Miles Boykins and those types.
Come on now. You don't have to bring up Miles Boykins.
I know. Right? Salt in the wound, bro. Best blocking wide receiver in NFL history.
Still in the league, by the way.
Keon Coleman gives you a different kind of matchup that you could certainly use, especially with, the other guys you have on the roster. Your Rashad Bateman, your Zay Flowers. Obviously Odell's no longer going to be a Raven, so there may be a spot open up there.
Not a Kardashian either, Jason. He's out of the Kardashian market too. Let me tell
you. Is he?
He's out. She said his genetics are so good. She wants his babies, and apparently he broke up with her right after that comment was made public. So anyway, go ahead, Jason. I'm sorry,
but I don't think you would have to take Keon Coleman there unless you're afraid of, say, like the Chiefs or somebody like that taking him immediately or after. I think you could probably make a play for him in the second round. He may be there at 60. I don't know. It just sees how teams stack these wide receivers. I know you hear it all the time that once you get past the first three, it's like 4 through 12 is like, this team may have it in one order. This team has it in a completely different order based on what the offense is, what they need, who they like. So he could very well be receiver number 6 off the board. He could be number 12 or number 14 off the board. Wow. Again, it's a good stack. I don't think you have to take him in there at 30. I think you could. And like I said, kind of like only some of these other players, like I think the value would be perfectly fine. But it just depends on whether you think he's, somebody else covets him, there in that range or maybe a little after. Mm.
Well, Jason, you've been super patient with us tonight, hopping in and out and hanging out with us. We greatly appreciate it, man. Thank you so much.
One last question. Are we going to wait all night and see him trade out? Just be honest with me.
Yeah, that's a good
question.
Are they
trading out?
I mean, there's always a possibility. Yeah. If you're wiped out at tackle, I don't think you're going to jump and take a guard there.
Okay.
You could very well be wiped out at corner and then you're having to reach a little bit. And then maybe you're looking at a receiver. Maybe then it becomes Keon Coleman, but you may like it. But then also it could be somebody wants to come up for quarterback.
Bo Nix.
Yeah, Bo Nix. Or
Penix.
Penix. I just don't know. But there's always that possibility. Like I said, the mock that I did last night, I actually had Ravens moving up. So we'll leave that as a cliffhanger.
Yeah, we'll certainly have to get clarity on that next week or whenever we have you back. Hopefully it'll be next week.
Definitely hoping to have you on again for sure. Obviously prior to the draft, because we want to keep people up to date. Jason, we want to give you a second to let people know where they can find you. I know you're on Twitter, but also want to give you a chance to shout out your website. Mm-hmm. Because look, guys, if you guys are looking to get into the draft, looking to get excited about the draft and looking to make some money off your friends, you should probably use Jason's website as a resource, because
I saw Jason's name at the top of the list. I saw Mel Kiper at like 114 on that same list, okay? So when you're talking accuracy, go with the guy who had the belt strapped to him and not, Mel Kiper. Like Mel, but let's be honest.
Yeah,
okay? I got to get the belt back out. It's part of my moving box stuff.
Next time you're here, I want to see the belt on your shoulder for the entirety of the show.
I'll bring it out. The final boss. At DraftFlex on Twitter, I'm not as active as I used to be on there, but I do post whenever I publish something new. But the site is NFLDraftFlex.com. So everything's up there now. The board's up, the positional rankings, the mock draft 1.0. Team needs on there, which I'll look at adjusting those formatically for you, Glenn, and our other colorblind friends, so that they're a little bit easier to digest. And the top 100s, and all of that's already in flux. So I just published it all last week. The board's added another, I think, 20 guys today, just from the non-combine and that sort. So I'm going to kind of go through that process, and we'll see when the next one comes out, maybe next week. Nice. And then, look for the mocks here coming over the next month. We're 30 days or so away from the draft. So a lot's still to be done, but it'll be here before you know it.
That's awesome. I'm excited to hear more about this trading up. Thanks so much, Jason. We appreciate it, man. Have a great evening. Enjoy the pleasures of moving and moving boxes. But wait, last question I actually asked, what part of Dallas are you in, if you don't mind me asking?
Kind of Bishop Arts.
Okay, cool. So, my brother's out in Wiley, area.
I'm kind of a little south of downtown, so.
American Giant makes great clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, and more, right here in the U.S. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early, so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, enjoy it, man. Cool. Get some good tacos or something.
Oh yeah, of course.
Nice. All right, Jason, take
talk
care
to you later,
buddy.
Jason.
Oh, thanks y'all guys.
Yep, see you. Well, yeah, I mean,
and then there was one
and now the grilling begins. No, you know, Cole, I'm so glad you were able to join us tonight, because I do want to get your take on a lot of these NFL rule changes, as well as Jimmy's take, because I know you are very you got an opinion on some of these, and I'm interested, because I'm seeing flashes of this upcoming season, and I'm thinking about how in the hell these Ravens or these referees are going to enforce the hip drop tackle. And I'm wondering, do you see a way, like, how is it that they're going to be able to do this without infuriating every fan that it's called against, when it's called against their team?
So you know how this is going to go. This is the most clearest day path. It's going to get called a bunch in the, well, wait, did they say what the penalty is? Do we know what the penalty
15
is?
15-yard personal foul.
So here's what's going to happen. It's going to get called like two or three times in the first preseason game, because they do this every time they change a rule. They enforce it heavily in the preseason, trying to figure it out and basically get themselves tape of making the calls. And then when the regular season comes around, they tone it back a little bit. So
until the AFC Championship game, right?
Pardon?
Until the AFC Championship game, right?
And then we don't call pass interference. So that's how I think it's going to go. So I think in August, everyone's going to be losing it. But I do think they're going to find it's going to only be called like the defenseless player one, like the one Kyle Hamilton got ejected for this year. I think they're going to get to that place. I think what I was surprised about was watching the clips that they were showing and the amount of swivels that they were calling hip drops. So I know that's the second point in the NFL's explanation of the rule. They have to grab, swivel, and drop weight, right? Like those are the kind of the three checks. So obviously I know the swivel's part of it, but I thought like you really had to swivel. That's the exact video. I thought you kind of had to swivel like the one on Tony Pollard. Like I just didn't think that was necessarily what we were talking about. Like the Logan Wilson tackle on Mark Andrews felt like he latched on and dropped his entire weight onto the lower body. But some of these just look like
they slid, like they're just sliding.
That's how, like, that one's a little bit like, again, it's kind of pulling back on it. And he, you can see, like, he's not swiveling, but you can see him pulling backwards on him. So, like, I kind of get that. But I don't know. I guess I just didn't really understand what they were going to call it.
Yeah. We've seen Metabike doing it right there.
Yeah. What's your take on the kickoff changes and kickoff holding on?
I love it. Anything to make special teams more important, I'm all for, because I think it's a part of the game that they just were like, yeah, we don't need this. And I think it's one third of the frigging game. And it gives a lot more meaning to these bottom of the roster guys that are special teams only. You know, I love it because I think we're going to be good at it. And I think it's going to give us a competitive advantage. Simple as that.
And I'm going to throw this up because I don't think a lot of fans know. So obviously we just talked about the hip drop has been banned. NFL owners voted on it. Competition committee voted on it. It's been passed. It's banned. But I think a lot of people are still unsure exactly what this change of kickoff return is going to look like. And my understanding is they stole it. They borrowed it from the XFL. Yeah. It was primarily there. So I want to throw this up. That way you guys can kind of see what they're saying. Here, let me restart this because I think you guys might have missed some of it. But it's very quick. It's just kind of a breakdown on what to expect from the new kickoffs, and it's quite interesting. So it's going to be a new look. It's going to be something to get used to. It's not like it's going to look like your average. It's not. They're not going back to an old one. This is a brand new way of doing things here. So still kicking off from the 35.
10 members of the kicking team will line up on the receiving team's 40-yard line.
So you're lining up over on their side.
Right. A minimum of 9 members of the receiving team will line up between the 30 and 35-yard lines.
So they're right next to each other.
Yeah, play begins when the ball is either caught or hits the ground in the landing zone or is returned in the end zone. Any kick that hits the landing zone must be returned, and the kicks that bounce from the landing zone into the end zone must be returned or downed by the receiving team for a touchback. Yeah. And possession at the 20-yard line.
Yeah, and then if a kick fails to reach the 20, the receiving team gets it on the 40. So it's almost like if they kicked it out of bounds in the old rule.
Yeah.
And then if the ball enters the end zone in the air, they can get it to 30. So the ball can be at many different locations depending on the outcome of the kick and if there's a return.
Catch, baby.
And then onside kicks only permitted in the fourth quarter. So no more surprise after the half like we saw in the Saints game when they beat the Colts, how they shocked them coming out in the third quarter. We can't see that anymore. So it's a massive overhaul of the kickoff. But like you said, Cole, I love the fact that they're not doing more to eliminate the kick return. In fact, they're bringing it back in the game, and they found a way to, in theory, make it a lot safer. And apparently the injury rate is equivalent to a standard NFL play, whereas previously the kickoff return did have a much higher injury risk than a standard play. And I think, is it just because the fact that they're literally starting on the 40-yard line of the receiving team, and the blockers will only be like 5 yards in front of them? Are they just avoiding the full speed
high-end collisions?
Is that what it is, what you're saying, Cole?
Yeah, I would kind of get away from any sort of blind sides as well, like when you can use like cross block blocking formations. Okay. Though I never thought those happened in the NFL that much, so I always really wondered, like, what is the true injury rate on a special teams play? But it's basically just going to slow it down. It's a major adjustment. It's a completely different way of doing a kickoff. So there's going to be that adjustment that needs to happen. Right. But you know, 3 years from now, we're not going to really remember what it used to be like. Like basically the way it is right now is it's just, if you have a half decent kicker, it's just touchback. So there's no, like, I can't think of too many kick return covers we needed to do last year with Justin Tucker. Yeah. So I like that it's just adding that element back to the game. And if this is and I think a really unique element of it is the way it's going to be set up. You don't really just need kind of the fast corners and fast, because it's almost going to be like advantageous to have a running back, because it's going to be set up a lot more like an offensive line, right? And you can even use some heavier set players as the blockers, given it's not going to be in space as much. So I think it's going to really change the way they do it, and I'm really excited to see the way it's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm excited about the prospect of Keaton Mitchell being back there getting that ball in this type of scenario.
Hey, you know, Justice Hill too.
Justice Hill will be another one. But yeah, I agree with you, Derrick Henry. Shoot. What the heck? Wow. Why not? Right? But I think it'll change.
That's running back in the league.
Yeah, just Mark Jackson back there. But I think it will change as far as the guys that are back there, people we created with it, things like that. Yeah, man, it's exciting. We had a pretty action-packed show, Cole.
Yeah,
we
know you quick question, Nicole. I know you got like 2 seconds here. How big of the drop-off is it from Kevin Zeitler to Ben Cleveland? Because a lot of people in our chat are saying, if you look at the stats, if you look at the analytics, in certain areas, at least
here
in
their opinion, looking at analytics again.
Ben Cleveland may have been better as a run blocker. And so I just want someone who, I mean, I don't know anyone who studies the offensive line and is more interested in O-line play than you. What's the drop off from Kevin Zeitler to Ben Cleveland? And is there any areas that Ben Cleveland's better at than Kevin Zeitler?
I think the drop off's going to be, I don't think it's going to be steep. I don't think steep. There's going to be a drop off. Like, let's just call it what it is. But even when he played left guard, I never once have been like, oh shit, Ben Cleveland's killing us out there. So I think he could, and it never made sense to me why he didn't compete at left guard last summer. Like, that didn't make sense in my head. I know there's been this whole narrative that he's a better right guard than left guard, and that might be true, but I just don't think, like, Ben Cleveland's played left guard before, and I never was like, oh, he doesn't belong there. So the whole thing never made sense to me. It always kind of felt like they just saw him as the future right guard. I think one thing Ben Cleveland does well that will mirror what Zeitler does well is he's a good pass protector. I think that's the strength of his game. I think what he's going to struggle with is just when he gets out in space, his stiffness. I know he tested really well athletically, but his ability to kind of locate target and then re-engage kind of his blocking technique with his stiffness is just a tough ask. So when we see them running more zone concepts, it's going to ask him to get there. I think he can get there athletically, but can he bend his body into positions to make blocks? That's going to be basically what determines it. I also think he has a ton of overextensions in the run game, especially when he is down blocking or, you know, doing an inside zone or even a duo. But he's also had a ton of combination blocks where he's looked really good. So it's just kind of inconsistency, but I think his pass blocking is good enough. And I don't think it's going to be the liability. I think they're going to have to sort out the left guard position. I think Cleveland can come in and do admirably. What I will say about the analytics and the stats, because they do make a good argument. Coach Evans had the same thing out as me. You cannot find the first game that Ben Cleveland filled in. You can find maybe 3 of his pass block opportunities out of like 30 where he single blocked a guy. They slid Tyler Linderbaum to his help to help on his side almost every single time. Double team blocks or pass off blocks almost all day. So he's successful on those blocks because they're easier to do blocks. So his grade's going up, right? Because he's not giving up negative plays. But that's where you can get lost in analytics on offensive line play. You have to understand what they're being asked to do and how is that difficulty being compensated for within the grading system.
Look, a great philosopher said it once, the more I know, the more I learn that I know nothing, right? And so
I also know nothing, so.
Right. So, Cole, this is exactly why we have you on. Thank you so much. We appreciate it because I know nothing when it comes to the offensive line, except that I like the boys in front to beat up on the guys that are the opposing team. So thank you so much. We appreciate it. We'll let you get back to old kiddos and family. Have a great night, man.
Thanks a lot, guys. Peace out, chat. Yep. Take
see
care.
You. See you next week. Yes, sir. I don't know if I'll see him next week, but
you may not. I'm hoping to.
Yeah, we'll see if we make it that far. But I think that's it. That's a wrap for us tonight as well. Let's get to a few super chats. Sorry, Eli. Yes. I can see either of two things happen. EDC gets a free agent O-line and go hard for cornerback in the draft, or the reverse. Free agent cornerback and go hard for the O-line in the draft. Yeah, I think that's fair. I could see the
only problem is a lot of those corners have been gobbled up.
That's what I was going to say, yeah.
I would have loved to see him bring back some familiar faces, but yeah. But I think that's a good point, Eli. I think they could go either direction or both. They could get a veteran O-lineman and a veteran corner, and then whoever's best available take that guy.
Yeah, but I do think that it's more likely they sign another O-line guy or two. I think Jason's right. Maybe two rookies up front. They get really good. You know, they get two really good rookies early, but three. Oi! Sounds like a recipe for some growing pains and concerns for one Lamar Jackson. So that's it for us tonight, folks. Wait, sorry. I lied again.
Our guy Asmodeus.
Dude, I love. Have you had Fogland?
No, I keep hearing it's great. I've never had it. Bro. I know, dude. Bro. I'm not very cultured, okay? I'm a chicken tenders and hot dog type of dude, okay?
This is true.
A basic, I'm a basic B word, okay?
I was just talking about that the other day because we went to a Mexican spot that's super good. And I was like, dang, I think Glenn would really like this place. And I was like, you know what? None of the menu is in English.
Well,
Glenn's going to look at the menu and be like, son of a bitch.
Hey, as long as it's not color-coded, I think I can get through it. I would just FaceTime with you, Jimbo, and have you tell me what the hell to order off the menu.
I would just get it for you off the menu. Yeah, for sure. So we'll have to go there sometime, but for sure, there's a pho spot right near my house as well.
So I would have said that's pho. So you're saying that's pho.
It's pho.
Okay, see? I don't even know that. That's how little I know. But Asmodeus, I appreciate your continued generosity and support. You are the man. Appreciate you. I really don't know. But either way, that's it for us tonight, guys. Don't forget, Orioles baseball opens in just 2 days, pending weather, but if not 3 days. But cannot wait to see our O's back on the field. But we'll still be back here in just a couple days to talk some more draft, talk some more Ravens developments.
And we might slide in our first mock in this upcoming week. So we do it live on the show. So make sure you guys are here to join us.
Yes, sir. Can't wait. And we'll talk to y'all soon.
See ya.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.